Hi, my name is Geraldine. I'm an addict.
Hi, Geraldine.
Addict. I don't know if this is this working?
Yeah, it's working.
It doesn't sound like anything's happening, but hopefully it is. I'm just going to hang on to it, if you don't mind, for a moment. It's great to be here. I've sat where you're all sitting, and I've looked up here, and I thought one day it'd be me. And I've listened to some chairs, and I thought, what a load of shit, you know? How could, you know, why do they always say how nervous they are? Right, I think I might have to make a few amends after this to all those people that I thought bad thoughts about, or, you know. It is nerve-wracking. It's important, this chair. It's important because it's not a normal meeting where people are going to share back. So there's this sort of sense of the unknown. You don't get any feedback. You don't know if you meant anything to anyone, if you connected to anyone. And it's a meeting where newcomers come. Newcomers are brought by their sponsors. I was brought by my sponsor. And they're brought to hear a message, to hear the message of recovery. It's sort of important. I share at meetings all the time. I get loads of meetings. And I share about just how I'm feeling today. And I might well do that now in a minute. I have no idea what I'm going to say. But there is a sort of a bit of more of a responsibility here at Trafalgar Square. I feel it on me. I felt it all day. And I hope that I don't give anybody a negative message, because I can be very negative. I live in negativity a lot, especially in the morning. No matter how I go to bed, I've got it all worked out when I go to bed. I've got my diary, I've worked out what I'm going to do, and I'm feeling really calm and serene, and I do maybe meditate, do a bit of prayers. This is after I've been out for dinner and I've done nice things. I've had a nice day, good day. Even if something's gone wrong, I generally turn it around. I can turn around my day. That's what recovery has given to me, the ability to change things, to change what's happening, just by letting go, just by allowing things to happen and take their normal course and not force things to go my way. But I go to bed at night and I sleep really well. Thank God. I am really, really grateful. I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends in fellowship and out, who really have struggled with sleep. They have insomnia, or they wake up, they have nightmares. I sleep like a baby. And then I wake up and my head wakes up with me and I can't shut it up. And it's just a matter of time. It can be minutes, it can be hours. And every worry in the world is just in there screaming at me. And it can be depressing. I find it very depressing. It brings me down. I've tried everything. I still try everything. I tried everything before I got clean, and I still try everything. I go to doctors. I've tried antidepressants, stopped those. I've tried St. John's Wort. I've tried different vitamins and yoga, and I've tried everything, and I just feel that my problem is that there is an overlap of situations in my life that have affected the way I handle recovery. And it's the same for all of us. We all have had our lives. We've all got fabric and texture to our lives, things that happen to us anyway, that would have happened anyway, whether we took drugs or not. And we can be depressed about something. Depression doesn't mean I've got to get to a meeting, necessarily. It doesn't always mean that. It doesn't always have everything has to do with my addiction, the fact that I'm an addict. Things went wrong. I had a wonderful life. I had a very strange childhood, I must say. I'm sure most of us will have that in common. Really dysfunctional. My mother was an alcoholic, barbiturate addict. My father was all right, but he left. He buggered off because she was so mental. And I was the baby of the family, and I was loved to death almost. I was not allowed out, I wasn't allowed freedom, and I found my freedom when I got to my teens. And of course I found drugs and drink as well. But it didn't take over my life yet. That's not where it begins. I took drugs recreationally like all my friends did. I drank like all my mates did. I met my husband, fell in love, I was married for 39 years. We had three beautiful children. He made a lot of money at one point. We had wonderful holidays, cars, nannies, the works. I had enough money to buy my own coke. I had enough money to keep it a secret. And it was all fine until it wasn't. And we all have that point. And sometimes we don't know when it happened or why it happened. Was there a trigger for it? Or is it fate? Am I doomed? But there's a certain point where I crossed my line and it stopped being good. And it started to be something I needed. I started to actually develop a physical dependency on alcohol and a mental dependency on cocaine. And I use both all the time at the same time. And that, I'm afraid, my friends, is fatal. But I didn't know it was fatal, and even if I did know, and even if I had a sneaky suspicion, I rejected the idea. I was in denial, like, you know, one does do that. You know, you just don't want to face stuff. Everything else was so good in the background, I couldn't. This was spoiling it. This was not good. So I just pretended it wasn't happening. I pretend a lot of things don't happen if I don't like them. I've got a brother who's an incurable schizophrenic, and I put him in a little box and sellotaped it up and put it away and pretended I didn't have a brother because it was too uncomfortable. I didn't want my friends or my family, my children, to see him, to hear him, to be around. So he disappeared. I pushed him out of my life altogether. Because of his illness, he wasn't that bothered. He lives in a world of his own. He wasn't trying to get in touch with me, but I, you know, pushed him away. And I have actually made my amends to him. He doesn't know I've made an amend to him, but I have. And I'm looking after him now in the background. And he doesn't realise that I am. He doesn't accept that I'm his sister. He just says things like that he knows someone, you know, he knows me and he likes me and he thinks it's a real coincidence. He says, you know, it's funny your name's Geraldine because I've got a sister called Geraldine as well. But she's a real bitch and you're really funny. But it upsets me, and it was really, really, I felt terrible because I abandoned him, even though he didn't know he'd been abandoned. You don't have to have that affirmation from someone to know that you've done something wrong. You know, I've got friends that I know that I hurt, and they'll never show it, they'll never admit it, they'll never come up to me and say what I did to them. I've made amends to friends and they said, I don't know what you're talking about, you never did anything wrong. I really, you know, the fact I didn't talk to you again for 10 years has got nothing to do with anything you did, you know. Which is really sweet, but it doesn't, you know, I really want to get, I'm saying, but you don't understand, this is really important, I need to make an amend here. Sadly, my husband got ill with a motor neurone disease, and my using wasn't out of control, it was very, it was too controlled, actually. It was controlled to the point of madness. My whole life was involved in the getting, the finding, the taking, the hiding, the making sure I never ran out. I never ran out. People would always phone me because they know if they ran out, I would be sure to have some. I was very reliable. And thank you. And they go quick. Do you want to swap seats? Only joking. Anyway. While he was ill, I kept it together. I used more because it helped me keep it together, actually. And I cared for him, and then he died very, very suddenly, unexpectedly. He got pneumonia, and he was gone. And I'm going to say something now that you're going to think is really, really horrible, but it's true. It wasn't the first thing I thought, but it was within an hour or two of him dying, I thought, I'm free. I'm free from this man who was the love of my life. We had the most wonderful marriage. I mean, he wanted me to stop. You know, we'd smoke joints together. We did that kind of thing. It was all very nice. He couldn't understand why I still took coke. He couldn't understand why I drank so much. And I felt, I'm free now. I can do what I want, take as much as I want, drink as much as I want. I don't have to go to the toilet anymore. I can do it in my living room. I can do it anywhere I like. No one's watching me anymore. And I spent the next 8 months nearly killing myself, physically, definitely, mentally, spiritually. It wasn't that I walked around with a spiritual void all my life, but boy, did I get one then. That's why I understand when other people share about that void. I know what it's like to have a hole, like gouged out hole. And all I could think about was myself and why me? How dare he die? How dare he leave me with not enough money? What's going on? Why have I got a mortgage? Why have I got this? Who's going to look after me? I thought, don't worry, Geraldine, it'll be all right. You'll find another man, and you'll get another job, and you'll get a new house and a new car, and you'll be fine, and you'll just carry on using. No, that isn't what happened. I ended up in rehab. I ended up having to be so ashamed in front of my children, who have supported me unconditionally. I know about unconditional love. And then, when I came out, I found the rooms. I found my friends. And I have made so many friends in this fellowship. And I've only been around for a couple of years. And I could tell you, if I had more time, I'd tell you about the relapse story. I've relapsed twice. Once I relapsed because I was too happy, and once I relapsed because I was too sad. And now I know. You have to learn. It's my journey. We all have a journey. There is no shame. A friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, has relapsed this week, and it was just what AA calls a slip. But it's done his head in. He tried to keep it a secret for 3 days, couldn't do it. He just had a pipe, one few puffs on a pipe, and that's it. He's given in all his commitments. He's picked up a white keyring. It took him 3 days. But he hasn't lost his recovery. He is still a good man. He's learned so much. He can't unlearn what he's learned. You cannot take that back from him. And we've all come and gathered him up and said, don't worry, mate. You'll be fine. If you want to, you keep your commitments. My message to any newcomer is, however hard it is, and it will be hard, it always will be hard, everybody's journey is different. What takes me a year could take you a month. You can't compare. If you start to compare, you start to despair. And I don't want anyone to think that because I have struggled or I still struggle a bit, that it's too hard. It's hard, but it's not too hard. We're all here to prove that tonight. And I'm so grateful I've been asked by Penny, and love you all, really. I'll leave it there.
Thank you.